On air. Online. On Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me? I'm not a man.
Well, I have to tell you, the honest to God truth is that it is really good to be back. Holidays are wonderful. And I'm not taking them for granted. Holidays are a blessing. There's something about being paid to sit and drink a beer on the patio. That's amazing. It's a gift. And I don't think it's luck. I mean, I worked hard to have a job that pays me when I'm on holiday. So I don't think it's just luck, but it certainly is. I'm blessed in that way. However, I was essentially single momming it with the three boys last week because my fiance Scotty was working like 15, 16, sometimes 17 hour days, and a lot of overtime, a lot of big projects happening. So from morning to night, I was doing it by myself. And they're not babies, 13 and 2 8-year-olds. You'd think they'd be pretty self-sufficient, wouldn't you? You'd be wrong. And basically, I was the snack, you know what, witch. Just, can I have a snack? Can I have a snack? And it's snack, 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 snack. And we've talked about this. Anyway, I just had an appreciation because by the time it was bedtime, I was exhausted and I didn't want to stay up any longer. So it wasn't even like, you're like, okay, bedtime's coming. I can just have a moment to read a book or breathe. I just fell into bed at the same time. I was in bed. Polly, I went to bed earlier on holidays than I did when I come to work.
You need to catch up on all that sleep that you've missed.
It was exhausting. And I just thought to myself, make sure, Jennifer, when you go back to work on Monday, that you give some sort of acknowledgement and shout out to all the single moms and all the single dads who do that. That's their existence all the time. Every single day, because I almost didn't make it. I really did start to take it personally. I thought they were trying to kill me by Thursday for sure. And, but we did lots of fun things. It was fun. It was just, it's a lot, you know, when there are three people saying your name all at the same time, because children are little narcissists and nothing is more important than what they need right at that moment. But we did some great fun stuff. We went to the library, the KPL main branch location, which was super great with the 3D printers and all the wonderful things. And that was a wonderful morning. We did the market too, which was lovely. And then we did the museum out on Homer Watson. And Polly, did you know you can catch fish in Schneider's Creek at the museum?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
I didn't catch anything. The kids caught some fish, some of them sizable, in the creek, which was, and it was cool because they were doing it, you know, 1914 style. So it was just a cane
piece of stick
and then a, like a ball of dough on a hook.
I love the Waterloo Region Museum.
Isn't it lovely?
Yeah. Well, I live right near there, so I've been a number of times. Do they have an exhibit on right now? I always love those little temporary exhibits.
They do. The Canada-Germany one, talking about the immigration from Germany to Waterloo Region, obviously.
Cool.
And we didn't even make it inside because we did the whole village, and then we were fishing in the creek. And then, of course, inevitably, at I think we got there about 9:30 when they opened. By 11:30... you know, after we'd had some water and such, it was, I need a snack. I was like, okay, let's go home. We're going to make lunch. Anyway, it was great. So we did do some stuff, but we tried to relax too. And Yeah, I'm not cut out for single parenting. So let's really hope that this whole second marriage thing goes well for me, because can't do it. I decided it's just out of my realm. So good for you guys who are doing it. And I mean, and just maybe send me some tips for next time, please. Polly, how was your week? What's going on with you? I haven't seen you in a long time. Things are good. What's happening?
Not too much. Trying to stay out of the heat. Our air conditioner, I think this is even before you left, our air conditioner was leaking, so we had to turn it off for a couple of days, but that's all fixed now.
It's fixed.
God.
Did it cost $7,000?
No. You know what the thing is? I didn't know. The things you learn as a new homeowner.
Yeah.
And there's a little filter that I'm supposed to change on the furnace, or at least dump all the guck out once a year.
And
it was all kind of backed up, so there was water leaking from my furnace. Guy came over, you know, dumped the dirt, dumped the guck into the garbage, $100.
Come on.
But I know how to do it now.
Now you know how to do it. So do you know what happened to me this morning? Our air conditioner has gone a little fritzy. I think you did it because you said it out loud, and then mine was like, huh, let's see if we can do. So the air conditioner in the house is, it's just, could use a new one, I think is what the bottom line is there. But last week I had my car at the shop for an oil change and a tire rotation, and I leave the shop. I drove out of the parking lot, and the air conditioner stopped working.
In your car?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I just got the phone call. Do you want to know how much? Does anybody care? I don't know if you care or not. Like $1,200.
Ouch.
Yeah. I might be driving with the windows down for a bit, Polly. Because now I got to decide air conditioner in the house, air conditioner in the car, both at the same time. You know what? How long do I really want to be paying off a mortgage? Just add that
I would take air conditioning in the house.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think you're right.
You spend more time there, and plus you can just roll the windows down and drive really fast.
Yeah, and look cool doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Polly. Thanks for helping me work that out this
morning.
No
problem.
It is going to be an interesting day. We're going to have a lot of relationship talk this morning. Canada's dating coach, Chantelle Hyde, is coming in. We always have a wonderful time with her. And she sent me a little teaser about what we're going to talk about today. An email she got from an anonymous person. And it's talking about patterns in when we're choosing a partner. Kind of that bad boy complex thing. Is it a complex? I don't know. It's a thing because there's a name for it. Why? Why does this person keep gravitating towards the bad guy, the bad boy? We're going to find out. If that sounds like your pattern, you probably want to be with us after 9:30. Demi Moore showed up at the roast of her ex-husband, Bruce Willis, last night, and it was very funny. I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I was just reading some of the transcript. We're going to talk about that. Do you have an interesting relationship with your ex? Because remember when she was married to Ashton and they would all kind of have dinner together? And do you have an interesting, and I mean, I don't even know what that interesting word means. Like, you know, exceptionally good or something kind of, you know, the fact that she showed up there with what didn't seem to be a hateful thing. It was a funny thing to roast her ex-husband. Made me kind of think about, like, what's your story? Do you have an interesting relationship with an ex in some way? So I want to hear those stories, too, coming up. You can send them to me now, Jennifer@570news.com. As we know, the PC, the government's decision to roll back the sex ed curriculum 20 years is going to prove to be quite problematic for teachers, for staff, especially for students. And we've had a lot of discussion about this leading up to it, and we'll have a lot of discussion about this as we continue through these conversations, which I know you'll want to talk about today. Let's talk about the sex ed curriculum, going back to the curriculum from 1998. It's not that simple, is it? Welcome to the show this morning, Lindsay Butcher, who's the executive director of the Shore Center. Lindsay, thanks for coming on. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so I definitely know your stance, certainly, on what this means for students, that you have said unapologetically and many times that this certainly puts our children at risk. So let's talk about the ways that it does.
Yeah, we were very disappointed when we learned last week of the decisions of the government's quick decision to repeal the curriculum back to the 1998 version. We've delivered that curriculum for many years, and we know that it does not equip kids with the information and the tools they need to keep themselves safe in the modern world.
Yeah, and I think the problem seems to be, to me, that when people are, you know, so very fearful about what this updated sex ed contained, that there's so much misinformation in what people deem to be, you know, oh, it's too much too soon and so on and so forth. So maybe let's talk about that. What is actually in the updated sex ed? And I think people, what I see people talking about is that, you know, they're worried about their 6, 7, 8 year olds being presented with information that they're not mature enough to handle yet, which is, doesn't seem to be the case if you actually read the curriculum.
Exactly. So the curriculum for grade 1s and grade 2s from 1998 to the 2015 version, very similar content. Nothing really new for the younger grades. What does shift is sort of when you get into like grade 4 especially. We were talking to kids in the new curriculum in grade 4 about anatomy and the changes that they were going to be experiencing. In the 1998 version, that won't happen until grade 5, 6, and 7. And so a lot of kids are going to be hitting puberty before they've learned any content on that. So that's one of the main changes, is that things did come down 1 year because we know that children are hitting puberty right earlier than they used to. The main piece, though, of the new curriculum was around consent. Mm-hmm. That was the big change in the curriculum, was really talking to children that they are the boss of their own body, that they can say yes, they can say no, and it's up to them and their decision, and also what consent looks like. So if they're in a relationship, that they don't confuse compliance with consent, that they don't, they understand what coercion looks like, and they know that they can talk to a trusted adult, like a teacher. Not every child has a trusted adult in their family, sadly, and so it's really important that they know that if something is going on for them, either in their family or out in the community, that they have that teacher who is comfortable to talk to about these issues.
Yeah, and we've heard stories. Actually, the Star had a story from a woman who talked about being pulled out of sex ed classes, and she didn't learn about her body, and because she didn't have the words or the terminology or the understanding to identify what was happening to her, that she was easily abused and easily kind of groomed into this behavior because she believed what the abuser was saying to her, and she didn't have kind of a background or any other ideas that this was wrong.
Exactly. And now we know that that's children are being bombarded with that now because of access to technology. So we know that kids often have a cell phone that has a camera on it. And without understanding the responsible way to use that technology, the safe way to use that technology, we know that most relationships are starting online now. And so it's really important that we prime our children with that information so they know what's appropriate for online. They know what the risks are with sending information online, sending photos online. Those are the questions that kids have now. And if we don't have this as part of the curriculum, we just have our head in the sand.
I've seen some teachers talking, and I'm hoping to actually get one of them on in the next couple of weeks. Some teachers talking about sharing the current, well, or what was the 2015 curriculum online, doing video series and putting them on YouTube about teaching that curriculum and kind of getting around this in some ways. I saw a teacher said that on Twitter. He said, "I will teach consent, truth and reconciliation, and gender sexual diversities. Equity policy will let me do this." Mm-hmm. So there are some teachers who are certainly finding the way that they can teach these imperative things to our kids instead of going back decades.
Yeah, and there's always been amazing teachers who have always been very forward-thinking, ensuring that they were meeting the needs of their students, that when students asked questions, they did their own research, they got their own resources, and they were able to support their students in that way. I'm not going to be naive, though, and think that every mm-hmm. teacher is going to be able to do that. And that's what the curriculum was. The curriculum gave teachers those resources, those tools. It was all vetted, age-appropriate, backed by science. to support teachers in having some really sensitive and sometimes uncomfortable conversations with young people. You know, not every teacher is going to feel comfortable doing that. And so the curriculum gave them that confidence, gave them that information, so they knew if the student asks me this question, I can give them these 3 points, and I know exactly what to say. And that it's going to be backed by science, and it's not just going to be my personal opinion. That's a concern. When you don't give teachers, you know, the appropriate responses, the information that's backed by science, and they're in front of a class of 30 kids, and a kid puts their hand up and asks an uncomfortable question, what are they going to say?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that early sexual education, health education leads to only good outcomes for our
Absolutely.
Kids. We know
it delays the onset of sexual activity, which is there's a huge myth out there that if you talk to kids about their bodies or sexual health, they're going to engage in sexual activity. We have loads of data, loads of evaluations and science from around the world and in Canada that backs up when kids get comprehensive, and that means from grade 1 to grade 12, comprehensive sexual health education, they delay the onset of sexual activity. And when they do engage in sexual activity, they're safe about it.
Yeah, so I mean, and when we talk about those risks, that because it's the Netherlands, I believe, that's got like the one of the lowest teenage pregnancy
Absolutely.
Rates in the world, and they start introducing things like this in kindergarten.
Exactly. We know the more information that kids have earlier, the better decisions they're going to make for themselves and for their health.
So what do we do then? Lindsay Butcher is the executive director of the Shore Center. What do we do if we would like to have our voices heard and save sex ed?
So I think it's really important that we reach out to our local MPPs as well as to the Minister of Education. So on Friday, myself and our education manager met with MPP Amy Fee in her office to talk about our concerns about the curriculum. I think it's important that other people contact her as well as MPP Michael Harris and our other MPPs in the community to get in touch with them to let them know that we're concerned about our children's safety. It's their responsibility. There's going to be consultations coming forward. If you're a parent, get out there. Get out, go to the consultations, participate in the consultations, make sure that your voice is heard. I'm very concerned there's a huge risk that we might move back further than 20 years. We may revert to an abstinence-only model of sexual health education. And based on, you know, who's involved on the other side, I'm very worried about that. And we know from the states, the evidence shows that when you move to an abstinence-based education model, STIs go through the roof, teen pregnancy, you know, children not being affirmed about their identity. You know, the risks are real. And so I think it's really time as parents in this community that we do get loud, we do get involved. And we've elected these MPPs. They do work for us. And so it's important that they know what our concerns are.
Lindsay Butcher, always such a pleasure. Executive Director from the Shore Center, thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 922, are you one of those people who still insists that sex ed is a parental responsibility that should be taught at home? Are you okay with this rollback? Are you outraged by the rollback? Star 570, 519-570-2545. Let's talk about it. Is sex ed a parental responsibility or is it part of the curriculum? Have you emailed your MP? Have you emailed me? I have some of those too. We'll talk about that next. 570 News.
When extreme weather hits, count on the 570 Extreme Weather Center.
Oops. Turn the mic on. It's the first rule. First day back after vacay. 925. Sex ed curriculum is what we're talking about. This is an email from Howard to Jennifer at 570news.com. Howard says, the updated 2015 curriculum looked reasonable to me. I wish it was available when I went to school. Thankfully, my wife knew more than I did. My parents were not equipped to teach me. I was given no information and had incorrect information provided by peers, TV shows. My wife is an early child educator. They use proper terminology when talking with children. And now I'm more comfortable myself. My mother called it a jing-jong. So I never use that term or anything else. My father didn't talk about it at all. I tried to talk to my son and was quickly aware he had more knowledge than me. Encouraged him to ask questions and get information from reliable sources. All people deserve respect. And as a parent, I made sure my children knew that. Star 570. Hello, George. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jennifer. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
good. Jennifer, I'm just a little bit confused about what your guest did say. We don't want to teach our kids abstinence? I don't understand that.
No, because it doesn't work, George. What do you want the result to be?
But you want your son at 12 to say, yes, I consent to sex? That doesn't make any sense.
No. She didn't say not to teach them abstinence at all. She said when you only teach abstinence, the teen pregnancy rates and the STI rates go through the roof. If that's all you teach, you get the opposite result of what you want.
I just wonder what would happen instead of consent, because kids can't consent to sex anyway. Why can't we teach no? N-O, no. I don't understand
Nobody's teaching your child how to have sex, George.
No, the consent part. I understand the consent part.
Okay, well, children are those who are under 18, and do you really believe that teenagers are not going to have sex? Because they are still kids, and consent means, yes, you may have sex with me, or no, you may not.
So if she's 14 or 15, she can say yes or no.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just seems a little too young.
But what you think is too... It doesn't matter what we think is too young. How are you going to stop it, George? Tell me how you're going to stop it.
You're right. 100% you can't. But I was just hoping you would say, look, you say no.
Or given all the information that you've been given, then you make a choice on your own. And it's, again, all the science shows us that the earlier you teach kids about sex, contraception, STIs, pregnancy, the earlier you do that, the lower the pregnancy rate. And they wait longer. They do what you want them to. They wait longer.
Okay, I hope that's true. I'm just a little confused by that.
George, it's not, I'm not making it up. That's the statistical information. Those are the facts.
Right. All right. Thanks,
George. Bye-bye. Okay, dating, relationships, sex, something in the air this morning, I guess, because we are going to talk relationships with Chantal Hyde. She is Canada's dating coach, and she is going to join us live in studio coming up. We'll switch into, adult dating themes. She sent me a letter this morning, and perhaps you'll see yourself. This woman said, "Hey, Chantel, I have noticed a pattern when I choose a partner. I always pick the ones who have a past of substance abuse, issues with family, or seem to require rescuing." Is that you? We'll talk about it next. 570 News.
Making your smart speaker even smarter.
Alexa, play 570 News.
Playing 570 News.
:33 and we're back, and you'll probably remember a couple years ago when we started this show, more than a couple years ago, the first time we had Chantal Hyde on, Canada's dating coach, that revolutionary moment where she told us about the no kissing for 3 months thing. Now, Chantal's speaking directly to women who are looking for commitment, solid love relationship, not women who are trying to have the fun. Go ahead and have the fun.
I don't need to help them with that. That's
figure that out on our own, right?
Well, let me tell you, this is the advantage that women have over men, is we are that prize. When it comes to, I might get in trouble for saying this, but part of the reason why men really work so hard is, finally to achieve the woman of their dreams. And we embody what it is that they're looking for, because they are biologically driven to be sexual beings and plant that seed in order to continue the species. And so there's a drive to achieve a woman. And so really, the moment a woman presents herself sexually, it's very easy to find somebody who's going to play with her.
Easier for women to have the fun than for men to find someone who's willing to just no strings attached thing.
It is. I would say that it is easier for women to achieve that fun, and it's a little bit more effort for men. But when it comes to relationships, what we're doing wrong as women is we're following men's lead when it comes to timing of sexuality. And instead of, kind of standing back a little bit, seeing where it goes, observing behavior, and then choosing the right one for us, we're putting the cart before the horse. So we're getting sexual, which actually fools our brain into thinking we already know everything that we know about the person, which is why a woman, when she has a first kiss, regardless of how early it is, she has it on a first date, and then the next day somebody says, "Can I take you out?" Most women will say, "I'm seeing somebody." So that first kiss committed them.
So that's what it's all about. It's not about shaming or telling you to be virtuous in any way. It's always been about you take that time to observe the behavior.
It's all about matching.
It's vetting.
Yes. You vetting. Have to match your behavior to your intent. So if your intent is just having fun, then the only criteria is, am I attracted sexually to this person? And then you go for it. So you don't need me there, because as women, that's really easy. Go have fun and do it. I have nothing against that. I am very open when it comes to sexuality. I do not have that kind of, you know, you must abstain, you must be pure. Like, no, like, if you want to have fun, go have fun. But if you want a relationship and you're having trouble because you keep picking the wrong partner, call Chantel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to give you the behavior that's going to change the outcome, and the next one you pick is going to be the right one.
So we're going to get to that in a second, because I think that this letter that you got is, I mean, many, many of us could have written this letter. And about you know, the kind of the bad boy complex.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to that in a second. But let's go back to the relationship challenge that you've been doing for the entire year, for 2018. And people were just, you know, signing up on Facebook and learning how to improve a relationship, not necessarily a romantic one.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be, honestly, it could be with the person in the mirror. You know, like it's a family, it's a friend, it's a romantic, whatever it is. These are the steps you need to work on in order to change things, if that's what you want to do.
So we'll just tell you that you can go and join the relationship challenge even now. It's yes. not too late.
No.
And so we have gone over the steps in depth, and you can do that on the Relationship Challenge 2018 Facebook page with Chantel Hyde. Search it, it'll pop right up for you. But we're going to give the next step here this morning. So we're going to do a recap first.
Yes, a quick recap. The first one is meditation. The second one is creating a naturally positive brain. And then the third is releasing negative emotions. The fourth is detaching your emotional roller coaster from other people's rides. The fifth is knowing the love languages. So knowing your own and then knowing the other person's love language. And the sixth is now putting that into practice. So now we're actually going from interior work to exterior work.
And that all sounds like a lot, but and it is a lot. You got to put the work in, I suppose. If you want the rainbow, you got to put up with the rain. You got to do the work.
Absolutely.
But it's all there. It's all there. So if you're like, what was step three? Then just go and you can figure that out. But let's talk about step six.
Yes. So, you know, what I want you to be conscious of is that knowledge is power. And where you are right now at this sixth step is the perfect balance between knowing how to elevate love within yourself, reducing your fight or fear, knowing how to envelop it within your partner, like really kind of taking that interior peace that you've been working on and now pushing it outward. And I say, like, we infect each other, right? So you've been doing a lot of inner work to create a more calm and loving presence within yourself, because it's like my number one relationship rule is not fair to ask for anything you're not willing to do first. And so you want to bring love and peace into the relationship.
What about
right?
mowing the lawn? Can I ask for that? Because I'm not willing to do that.
Right?
Bad know, feminist. I'm just kidding. That was
No. I didn't know I was a feminist until Trump came into power. And this is kind of like, I mean, this is my life. I am dualities at all times, because I'm about to become president of Zonta in Waterloo in a couple of years. Like, I'm president-elect at this point. And Zonta is an organization, a UN-recognized organization of women who lean in locally and internationally to elevate women. So, you know, locally we're helping fund projects that help with like mental health and cancer research, or not cancer research, but cancer care for women. And internationally, we are educating women. We're fighting to end child marriages. We're fighting to end genital mutilation. And so, like, I'm really leaning into this feminist power. And yet, if you come and look at the dynamic at my house, it is gender rolled.
Really?
And I love it.
Well, I think that's fine, as long as you love it.
Absolutely.
Right? If that's what you've chosen for yourself, yes. then that's exactly what feminism is yes. choosing what's best for you.
Yes.
And not having someone else choose it for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah. And I say to people, like, and I love that. I mean, I like a little bit of shock factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I will literally say to people sometimes, I point at my husband and I go, he owns me.
You do not.
I so do.
But that's because I think it's got, it's like some sexual turn-on thing.
Oh, a little bit. No, I'm so this Again. Is the only man. There is one man in the world who can grab my butt, and it is that one. And it is because I have given him, like the ownership that he has is by permission.
Right. Well, again, I'd stand by. I think that feminism means you get to decide what's best for you.
Yeah.
As long as you have all the pertinent information to make right. that choice. What do people say when you say that?
Oh, it's just, they can't believe it. Like, there's that, like, did she just say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does he say when you say that?
Oh, he puffs out his chest.
I bet he does.
Oh, he loves it.
Chantel, you kind of lost me on that one.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie. Okay. So, sixth step is the, and I know a lot of people hear the love languages thing, and I kind of thought, and a couple different people said to me, read this mm-hmm. thing about love languages, find out your own love language. And I mean, there's 9 trillion articles on the internet, so that must be true, about love languages. So many relationship experts use these love languages as the basis for all kinds of different relationship, kind of classes or therapies or things like that. What if you're invested in finding out your love language, but your partner is not? Like, how do you get? You'd have to take this quiz, so to speak, to find out the love language.
Yes.
So how do you do that if you're doing the love language test, but your partner doesn't want to?
Well, you want to do it together.
Do it together.
Yeah,
okay.
Because, this is all about being the emotional leader. And we are monkeys designed to imitate. And so, and I say to women, don't demand that your man do things. Lead the way. Show him how it's done. And so when it comes to doing this love language quiz, go to Google, type in 5 love language quiz, click on images. There's going to be a 30-question quiz. Or go buy the book. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it to him and say, I want to do this with you. And you want to give a little bit of power over, right? Because you don't want to, you don't want to be demanding. You don't want to be bossing. You want to give him a sense that he has some input into this so that he feels he's doing it with you, not for you. And so you come to him and you say, I want to do this. When do you think would be a good time? It would take us about 8 minutes. And let him, if he's going to say, I don't know, say, can you let me know on Thursday, right?
So essentially, the thing after you've completed the quiz, you're falling into, five different ways
yes.
that we show or want to receive love.
Yes. And I love this because it clarifies and simplifies. And so gifts, obviously that one's, I don't need to describe it. Acts of service is, Jennifer, I love you, so I'm going to observe you. I'm going to see what you need to have done for you. I'm going to help you out, and I'm going to offer to do that, and I'm going to want to do it. Physical affection, cuddles, kisses, words of affirmation. You are such an amazing human being, and I love how you contribute to my life. Quality time, even at a distance, you can plug into quality time by making sure that you're texting, calling the person, doing some video conferencing calls. And then, oh my God, this usually happens.
I wasn't counting. Were we at 4? What are we at 4?
I think we're at 4.
The love languages.
Acts of service, quality time, words of affirmation, physical affection. What am I missing?
I can't believe how much... investment there is in this, in the love languages.
Here's the thing,
let me see if I can find them all for you.
When you know what to invest in, then now you're actually more efficient. Now the time that you spend showing love to the other person is much more efficient.
Right. Yeah. And so when you learn that, words of affirmation, acts of service, receiving gifts, quality time, physical touch. I think you got them all.
Yeah.
You got them all. So once you figure out what that love language is, then you're putting it into action.
Yes. So for instance, with my husband, it's acts of service. And so I am constantly looking at him going, what does he need? And men love that you can take care of those little things because we are multitasking minds as women. Men are single-tasking minds. And I find generally in relationships, and I say generally, that men will do more of the bigger things. And they appreciate having women take care of the smaller things. And this is something that does come naturally to us because females of our species are better inclined to notice small details. And it comes with the mothering gene, basically, because we're the ones that spend most of the time with the babies and the toddlers. And we will therefore notice when the color is off, the weight gain isn't happening, and we'll act quickly on that. Whereas with men, you know, it's more of a bigger picture for them. Like I say to women, don't worry about your cellulite because he doesn't see it. His brain doesn't pick up on that because for him, it's more of the big picture. He's seeing your outer curves and going, this is the woman I fell in love with. Even if your outer curves change, his mind is still there. This is the woman I fell in love with. Like it's a beautiful thing. This stress that we have over our appearance, it's not over the men. It's because we're competing with other women.
Mm. North American beauty standards.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a whole segment on that. Okay, I really want to get to this letter because I think that a lot of people are going to see themselves. Chantel Hyde is the Canada's dating coach and sent me a letter this morning from one of your, what do you call the people who come to you for dating help? Do you call them clients?
My people, my
your
tribe.
Your people. And I think a lot of women will see themselves in this letter. Mm-hmm. I certainly saw myself in this letter. For years and years and years, 20 years ago, maybe, maybe less. But I think that what is that whole chase the bad boy thing about and how do we break out of that? I think that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing because bad boy is a thing.
Right.
So let's talk about that. Oh, we're staying anonymous. I almost said her name. I'm not going to say your name. Anonymous. So we'll get back, take a break, and we'll come back to that. Do you find yourself chasing people who are unavailable? I don't mean just taken. I mean like, you know, mentally unavailable. Yeah, we'll come back with that next 570 News.
Take flight with Canada's team.
I want to fly.
Follow the Toronto Blue Jays through all 162.
That's way out of here.
Every walk-off hit, every game-saving catch, every heart-pounding strikeout. 570 News, your home for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
Canada's dating coach is Chantel Hyde, and you can find her, well, you can find her everywhere. Everywhere. Okay, so give them the rundown.
Oh, my God.
Where's your favorite social media, like, venue?
Oh, I gotta say Facebook. So I'm having the time of my life right now. Every Monday night at 8:30, I do a Facebook Live, and I'm addressing singles.
I saw some of those.
Oh, did you see the RJ Skinner one?
Yep.
No, wasn't that so good? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, so educational. So what we're talking about right now is last Monday, I had on a little bit of a personality, RJ Skinner. He's a writer for CBC. He's a wrestler. He's done, like, tons of acting. He just wrestled David Arquette this past weekend.
What?
I just saw on Facebook, he pinned him. So, yay, RJ Skinner, good for you.
It's part of the acting career, right. I'm going to guess.
TMZ. Okay. They went, David Arquette was on a red carpet, and RJ showed up. They had a little slap down on the red carpet on Friday.
Drama.
Yeah, it was
so good. Much drama.
So good. So I had RJ on, and we had a pretend date on Facebook, and we talked about the no kissing, but, you know, he played the person who's, like, on a date with somebody that he's interested in, who now all of a sudden brings up, you know, this no kissing for 3 months rule. And we had a very real conversation about that, the way it would happen for women on their dates. What are men going to ask? What are their concerns going to be? What's the pushback going to be? And how are you going to respond to that? And it was incredible because I don't know if you just notice that he went from, you know, fully not being subscribed to this, like, and this is so enlightening because that male mind, he literally said it. Well, it makes it worth it for me to be sexual during that wait and see period to see where it's going to go and how it's going to work out and whether or not we're going to be compatible enough. So for them, you know, sexuality is very forefront on their minds. And for them, sexuality is just a part of life. For us, sexuality is a bonding process for the most part. And I say the most part because obviously if you have an itch you want to scratch and you're not looking for a relationship, then just go ahead and scratch it. But when we get into sexuality with someone that we're looking to maybe start a relationship with, it puts our brain into relationship mode. So that was great.
And then we're not vetting anymore.
We're not vetting. It shuts down the red flag alert. It reduces your defenses because it tells your brain, I know everything I need to know.
Right.
And you don't question that. You just fall into that. And then it was really interesting because I saw another YouTube personality watching a video. And this guy was videotaping him telling a girl that he was having sex with, that I'm not committed to you. I'm not monogamous to you. I am having sex with a bunch of other girls. And if you don't like it, you can walk. And she's like, well, maybe we can just stay friends. He goes, I don't have friends that are girls. All of the girls that I have around me are girls that I'm having sex with. And she was,
sounds nice.
Well, she was disappointed by this because in her mind, they were working towards a relationship. And that's what happens in the female mind. Is when we start getting sexual, that bonding process really makes us want to work towards a solid commitment, whereas that doesn't necessarily happen with the male. He is having sex with multiple women because that's what he wants to do.
Okay, we've got 4 minutes to talk about this letter. I'll read the letter.
Goodness me.
You get into it.
Yeah.
This is from Anonymous. Chantel, I've noticed a pattern when choosing a partner. It seems I always pick the ones who have a past of substance abuse, issues with family, seem to require rescuing, if you will. I have no past of substance abuse myself. My father did alcohol. I don't know what that means.
I would say my father
was an alcoholic.
Drank.
Yeah. But I mean, I have questions. Heavily? No. Anyway, I'm close with my family. If I meet a guy who's more confident in life and closer with family, I don't feel like I can be me. It's like they might judge me. Anonymous, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a couple of things at play here. I remember when I was young, like grade 4, I said to my dad, Dad, I'm going to marry you when I grow up. And that's something that psychologists have long known, that we are most influenced by our opposite sex parent. And so we seek what's familiar, even if it's wrong for us. There's a combination of that with that yearning to be with the sort of model that we grew up with. And so that was really telling to me when she mentioned just in passing, you know, by the way, my father also had a drinking problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that pull, that seeking the familiar in combination with seeking the model that we grew up with. And I always say to dads, you need to date your daughters. You need to be that first male model. Show them how it's done. Show them how they should want to be treated, how they should be respected. Because she will take that forward into her dating life and she will seek somebody who is like you. And so it's kind of, you really have to analyze your feelings. You know, that seeking was familiar, even if it's wrong for us. I see this a lot. Women chasing men who are pulling away and pulling away from men who are chasing them. And they're not analyzing why they're pulling away from men who obviously seem to be so right for them. And another thing I say to women is make sure you have your perfect man list so that if you feel uncomfortable because somebody is leaning in too much, you can be objective about that and you can look at your perfect man list, compare this person, ask yourself, am I making sense to be pulling away from somebody who is obviously what I'm looking for? And does it make sense to be chasing the one who's running away and trying to pull that person in instead? So we do need to be very conscious. And this is why I call like my dating program conscious dating. Like, and this came, remember Gwyneth Paltrow when she split up? And they call it conscious uncoupling.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's reverse that and let's put some consciousness into dating and let's really observe who it is that we're going after and who it is that we're pulling away from. And really asking ourselves, is this making sense?
I think, and when I looked back on, and again, I'm just speaking from my own personal experience here. When I looked back on, like, and asked myself, why am I dating these guys who are just, you know, that bad boy thing? Mine was a little bit more about my weird narcissism. Like, oh, watch, I'll save you.
Oh.
I can make you love me enough that you'll want to save yourself. Like that kind of thing. So really, it had nothing to do with him. It was like a weird ego stroke that I was looking for.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
When I examined it later.
I chased the bad boys because they were just so much more exciting.
Yeah, sometimes.
And really
something
like
about a motorcycle.
Wow. Oh. Right. And a couple tattoos, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just fine as long as it's not destructive behavior. Okay, Polly's waving us wildly and furiously through the glass into the newsroom. Okay, one more time if they want to get in touch with you.
Canada'sDatingCoach.com or lovemaker.love, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, podcasts, iTunes, you name it. YouTube, I got it. Come find me.
It is 9:58, 10 o'clock, into the newsroom next, and then Mike Farwell is on his way. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'll see you tomorrow.